Blog Talk Radio.
All right, Chicago, let me hear you. A one, a two, a three. Take me out to the ball game. Take me out to the crowd. Buy me some peanuts and Cracker Jack.
Welcome to Ringside Wrap, a production brought to you by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com, where we bring you the latest news and information on major pro wrestling and MMA promotions, the occasional history lesson, and interviews with legends of yesterday and stars of today. And now, the GWH Radio Network presents Ringside Wrap.
Hello again, everyone out there. Welcome to Ringside Wrap. It is Wednesday, May 9th, 2012, 8 o'clock p.m. on the East Coast. I am Mike Sempervivi, joined as I am every week by the legendary Les Thatcher. And after a week off, we are back again. And Les, how are you, sir?
I'm okay, Michael. And how about yourself?
I'm not going to complain too much. Even though Alexander Ovechkin scored a goal already to put my Rangers down 1-0, I think I'll muddle through somehow.
Well, I don't understand you hockey people, but whatever.
Hey, we couldn't understand why they stuck a team in your neck of the woods in Columbus. I still can't figure that one out.
Well, you know, we have a hockey team here in Cincinnati, too, which was actually started by two wrestling people.
Really?
Well, sure.
I did not know that.
The Cincinnati Cyclones, Ron Fuller and Bob Polk, were two of the three original owners when that team came to town an up number of years ago.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
I'll be darned. And oh, actually, before we go any further here, I do want to mention, coming up at about 8:30, going to be joined by George South, who just came out with a brand new book, Dad, You Don't Work, You Wrestle, and can't wait to talk to him because... As legendary enhancement talent goes, for anyone who's in my age bracket, they grew up on Mid-Atlantic and the NWA at that period in time. George South was certainly one of those guys, and you know, it was always a recognizable name, but then finding out later on, even more than that, he was a guy that guys like Ric Flair, guys like Arn Anderson, guys like the Rock and Roll Express, they love to work with and they love to have around, so cannot wait to talk to him coming up here shortly. But Les, didn't get a chance to obviously do the show last week, but we have about 2 weeks of Raw, I guess, to kind of go over. This past week on Raw, Paul Heyman made his appearance, his first appearance back in WWE, as the agent slash representative of Brock Lesnar, which is a pretty good way to get around the fact that Brock Lesnar has got limited dates in his contract. What has been your thoughts over the last couple of weeks as far as Lesnar obviously taking the loss, getting into it with Triple H 2 Mondays ago, and then obviously the way they went with it this past week? What are your thoughts on everything going on right now and Paul Heyman returning back to WWE TV?
Well, you know, Heyman's a good talker, and actually he's got a good head on his shoulders, you know, for the business, not about actual business, I don't think, but for the wrestling business itself. Well, you know, as you said, it's a way to get around the fact Lesnar has limited appearances, and so he's got a mouthpiece. I'm wondering, you know, I guess speculation is whether they relive the actual lawsuit that Lesnar went through, what, was it seven, eight years ago when he left about, you know, that getting his freedom to pay and paid and so forth and so on with WWE. If so, then, you know, Heyman would be as good as anybody to get that done. I think Monday night was all right. I don't know what it's building for. I think the whole thing of demoralizing Big Show at the hands of Eve and Laurinaitis' interview or promo that when he lost his temper, it was the type of destructive heat that no one could stand. And I thought, oh, this is the same guy who stood with a hangdog look just a couple months ago while Triple H, you know, read him down the road. I realized that tying stories together and not having credibility be this company's idea of you know, making good sense. But I paid more attention to those things, honestly, Mike. I think that Brodus Clay was exposed a bit because of he actually had to try to sell, and the way he worked with Miz, I think he, you know, my thought is, you know, they try out main events, which is something I don't necessarily condone. In house shows, you'll read where two guys that are going to work on top of the pay-per-view or in a match on a pay-per-view have had a practice match in several towns. And I was watching this thing Monday, and I thought, why would they have put this guy out there like this if they hadn't found out in a house show whether he were capable of it or not? And, of course, he wasn't. He needs to stay in his formula to get over. I think, again, they've pointed out that Tenzai, the gimmick is not over. Matt Bloom's a good guy. I just don't think the whole gimmick, I don't know if anybody understands it, but they don't seem to be behind it. And I didn't think Cena's interview was too spectacular either. I mean, it didn't make a lot of sense. He's cleared, but he's not cleared. They don't want him to wrestle, but being the god that he is, he's going to wrestle anyway. And I thought, okay, we're kind of back right where we started from with that. So I don't know where it's all going. You know, my interest is more on how destructive they become on down the road with this thing, rather than how might they do it right, which I don't see. I don't know. What do you think?
That's what, yeah, maybe I, and again, it's hard to, because Brian and I, obviously not knowing what was going to happen on Raw, Brian and I on Wrestling Observer Live last Sunday, we were kind of talking about, you know, again, there were rampant rumors and a lot of talk that John Cena was going to go ahead and beat Brock Lesnar first day in. And it's just like, okay, I'm going to try to give them some benefit of the doubt, even though I thought that was remarkably stupid. That, okay, maybe there's going to be something, and then you get Triple H out, and it's like, okay, I don't really understand, and it's hard to give them the benefit of the doubt because they've done so many bizarre things, and they seem to take out personal business things and old things out on guys when they resign them. I mean, I'm not sure if there was supposed to be this worked shoot thing of Brock was really legitimately upset. And I'm going to ask you about this as far as working the boys, quote-unquote, in 2012, if what you think about that. But, you know, you're doing this thing over he's angry that Cena, and I don't believe any of this for a minute because of how he sold being knocked out after the pay-per-view match, but he was upset that Cena popped right up and gave a promo, and this might be the last time, and he said he was supposed to be stretchered out. Which then leads to, if he was legitimately upset about that, would his head just basically explode over the fact that I'm watching the Floyd Mayweather fight on Saturday night and Triple H is out there holding up two title belts, not selling his arm whatsoever, and I thought that was one of his big sticking points. I just don't understand a damn thing that they do, and it's hard to really give them credit where I'm going to expect them to. I just don't understand, and I don't. Obviously, this Brock Lesnar thing, maybe they had it planned all along that, okay, he's going to drop that match to Cena and we're going to go into Triple H and we'll do this thing about business. There are fans, most of the fans that are around don't remember Brock Lesnar leaving 8 years ago. You know, they might hear a story about him getting booed out of the Garden, he and Goldberg at WrestleMania and all that stuff, but I don't think they know what's going on. And I don't really have any faith in WWE to explain what's going on. And no. I don't know. And I just, what is your, when you heard about that whole thing about, you know, he puts on a show backstage and is angry and the rumors of it was, you know, to work the guys back there that he's legitimately upset and could leave at any time. Does this make sense in this era, this year?
Well,
I mean, I just don't get it.
I don't know that it makes sense in any era, but you know, here's actually what I think. First of all, if he were upset, I am in his corner. That was so bad, so stupidly bad, that Cena was able to make us. And the way to speak, I'm happy to be in Chicago. Exactly what does that have to do with anything?
Yeah.
Nothing, really. But the deal is, having been a babyface 99.9% of my entire in-ring career, there have been times where I have stolen a win from a heel who had beaten me down where it looked like he was going to beat me. And, just for lack of a, rather than going to some elaborate explanation, you know, like with a small package or and maybe on 3 1/10 that heel's kicking out, I realize that I'm not in no shape to continue the battle. If he decides to jump me, I'll roll out onto the floor. I'm leaning on the ring apron, barely able to maintain my footing. And the referee comes out and holds my hand up. I get the win. I'm still physically beat down. The heel's in the ring storming around, realizing that he got caught. And had at that point, I taken a microphone and started to say it was great to be in Charlotte or Nashville or Atlanta. I would think my opponent and the booker and probably the promoter all would have, lost their minds. And I wouldn't have blamed them in the least. Now, and I've said this to several other people, that finish that they had on that match, I'm going to turn it around for you very simply, get you a hell of a result, and send the people home with something to think about with a what if. Now, in the same scenario, if it appeared that Lesnar had him beat down and then Cena started a slow build comeback, not one of his patented from 0 to 100% in 2.3 seconds, but I don't know how to explain it to you verbally without actually trying to show you, but it's, the heel stalking, he's beating me down, he's stalking me. I maybe get one shot into the gut, which slows him down. I'm backing off, trying to get my thoughts back together, trying to clear my head and gain a little footing. And, he comes again and I get another little shot in, but I build slow, and finally I get, I'm up and I'm fired up. I get my comeback in, and I maybe get a couple false finishes. It appears that I am going to win, but Lesnar's able to kick out. And then finally whether I slam him or hip lock him or anyway, I bump him, and he lands near that chain. And he's able to scoop that chain in, and as I come in across him, he throws one sucker punch with that chain. Boom, down I go. He covers me. 1, 2, 3. Now the story is that this badass almost got his ass handed to him. Had he have not landed near that chain, I actually may have beaten him. And the fans go home with what if. They also go home with a reason to want to see the two of us go at it one more time. WWE wants to send everybody home happy. Why? I'm not really sure of that. Because most good dramas, whether it be television, on television series, usually send you home with a what if. And so you have a reason to come back the next week or the next season if it's a season ending, episode. But that would have been my finish. But the thing is, if he were legitimately mad because Cena babbled on, he had every right to be. But here's the other thing. $5 million. He's liable to, you know, he's liable to jump ship. He's liable to leave at any time. My question would be this. Does Brock Lesnar have that kind of FU money, that, as my friend Jimmy Cornette calls it, that at some point because of a slight or because of someone saying something they shouldn't or ask him to do something he doesn't particularly care for, he's got enough money to walk away from $5 million or the remainder of? And I'm sure there's something in that contract. Vince is not an idiot. There's got to be something in that contract, you know, that covers that to some degree. I mean, it's that they haven't handed him $5 million on the front end and said, hey, have a good time, Brock. Or, again, I don't think he, you know, would he have come back if he had the kind of money that he didn't need $5 million? So I don't really see that. And the other thing is, put me in his position. Well, Mike, you know, this is probably not the finish I think is a good idea, my first match back. But, hell, for $5 million, I'll wash your car. What the hell? You know, I mean, so... I think a lot of it is just, I don't know, show for the boys, show for the internet, show for whoever. But I think the finish was, it took the edge off of Cena. I don't give a damn, I mean, off of Cena, off of Lesnar, by beating him. I don't care how they did it. And then to have Cena make the comment, he may have to take time off, come back now. Hi, I'm okay.
Yeah. No tears, no breaks, no nothing.
Yeah.
Just a little sore.
That left me speechless. So, no, that wasn't right, and I don't care where they're going with this. It took the edge off. That's, you know, and part of his allure, if that's what you want to call it, is, as a heel, is that edginess. They keep wanting to use the word legitimacy. But, I don't think it was done right. And, you know, I'm assuming that Triple H comes back with a miraculous recovery from his broken arm, and they work at SummerSlam. More importantly, they're having whatever the title of this pay-per-view coming up in June is what, six weeks away at the most. It's one of these deals. They just finished a Extreme Rules, which basically is no rules. Now they're going to have another show, another pay-per-view, which is about, you know, stipulation. I mean, matches with, like, you know, cage match, Texas death match, Russian chain match, whatever. How do they build to that so quickly? I mean, I've seen all those matches be effective over the years, but there was time to build them, and I can't imagine they're going to build six or seven matches in the next 5 or 6 weeks that anybody will give a damn about for that June pay-per-view.
Say, we're about 20 minutes in here, and I got a little bit more to say after this, too, and I'm going to get to a little bit of MMA before George South pops on here in about 8-9 minutes or so. So
is that in your script? Has Rich got that in your script?
Not in the script, just the fact that we're going to break.
Yeah, would you tell the god of producers, I don't script my matches. I work on the fly. So don't ask me if you want to cut me off, Rich, okay? just tell me, shut up till we're through with all my stuff, okay?
I love our sponsors because they pay the site and everything money, but we need one really big sponsor, so we only have to take one break, and I'd be happy with that. But we're going to go to those sponsors right now. We'll be right back.
Georgia wrestling fans, you're going to want to make your plans to be at Johnny G's the first, third, and fifth Sunday of every month, 2 p.m. bell time, for Rampage Pro Wrestling television taping. And fans, if you're in Middle Georgia, make sure that you watch Rampage Pro Wrestling on Fox 24, Saturday 9 a.m. on the My 41.2, Saturday at 10 p.m. Cox Communications Cable, Thursday 8, Saturday at noon, and of course, Rampage Rewind, the one-half-hour show on Cox Communications throughout the schedule. Fans, be there.
Do you remember Tommy Rich? What about Ray Gunkel or Gordon Solie? Can't get those nasty Anderson brothers out of your head? Well, you can catch them again at GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Who was on the first card you attended? Who was it under that mask? Remember the first Omni Spectacular or the big main events at the Bell Auditorium? That happened in Columbus on my birthday. Find out at GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Whether you want to get back some of your past, or maybe you just want to find pro wrestling in your area, check out GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com.
If you're hurt, get the money you deserve. If you're in pain, get the money you deserve. At Terry and Peterman, we're personal injury attorneys who take a professional, thorough approach to your accident and injury claims. Don't call some long-distance law firm or satellite office. Don't trust your claim to just anyone. For a free consultation, call the law office of Terry and Peterman today, 229-247-0386, or go online at www.terryandpeterman.com. The law offices of Terry and Peterman, making things right.
This is Miss Rachel from The Empire, formerly known as Platinum Champions of Wrestling. Every Friday night, The Empire presents the best in professional wrestling
at the Academy Theater in Avondale State.
We're also at the Masquerade every month or so.
Check us out on Facebook. Just look for Platinum Champions of Wrestling.
And you'll get the latest details on all the hottest action from The Empire,
formerly known as Platinum Champions of Wrestling.
We get it. That's every Friday night at the Academy Theater and at the Masquerade as well every month. We'll see you there.
Back here on Ringside Rap, Les Thatcher along with me, Mike Sempervivi, and obviously the Beastie Boys pulled right out of the Les Thatcher collection of CDs. It's our bumper music tonight.
And Mrs. Rachel from The Empire through her nose.
Oh, no, that's The Empire to you.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Well, yeah, and we're going to have a lot of chance to talk about this after George South, too. One thing I do want to just shoehorn in here before we talk a little bit about MMA and boxing for all those people out there that I know listen to the show and wants to talk about it every once in a while, keep them updated. You know, as bad as it was for Lesnar, they had a silver platter with Cena to go back, and they don't have to rebuild Cena. You don't have to take him. I would take him off TV, but in this day and age where they can't live without him, they had a chance on a silver platter to basically bump him back down. Could have lost that match. They didn't have to go through this whole thing of being a Superman. Lord Tensai is not over. People hate John Laurinaitis. You know, this was a good chance to knock Cena down a few pegs and get people organically back into his character. All of the people that are booing him right now, I bet you a majority of those people were cheering him when the rap gimmick was going on and were completely fine with him. But as time has evolved, he's gotten stale, he's gotten old, he's gotten vanilla, he's gotten repetitive. It's a big sham show. And you had a chance to organically build him back up, and they blew that one completely out of their rear ends. And that was incredibly disappointing. And how much of this goes on Triple H? I don't know. I really don't. But one thing I know goes on Triple H is the fact that he has been vehement. Now, we've heard different things about him over time. There was the one pay-per-view where right afterwards they did interviews with, like, the Big Show and Mark Henry. They had a knockout finish. They had some things like that that lasted all of that pay-per-view. But that was talked about being a Triple H thing, wanting to rewind back and have those sorts of things. And one of the big things for him has been sell your injuries when you're out and about. You know, there's always, you know, the Jim Cornette stories about Bill Watts are always out there, unless you've had plenty, too, of, you know, tape fist match. You're going to have a tape fist match when you do the interview. Tape your fists. If you've gotten, you know, you getting burned with the fireball and you know, scuffing you up, you did what you had to do to sell the fact that you were injured to everyone. And Triple H supposedly was one of those people who has been for that, including recently, apparently, you know, reportedly getting on John Cena about being out in public. Not selling his arm injury at the hands of Brock Lesnar. And he appears Saturday night on the Miguel Cotto-Floyd Mayweather Jr. bout, which numbers are not out yet. but there is talk of this doing anywhere. The lowest estimate has been about 1.5 million. You know, upwards of 2, you know, even 2.5 million, which to me is impossible, but 2 million seemed to be a very realistic number. Far more people saw that than will watch a WWE pay-per-view. Frankly, that seemed to be even watching Raw right now, although Raw does get, in, you know, truly more than that, but still. You know, there were more eyeballs on this, and he's not selling his injury. Les, I don't know if, you know, the guy there, I know you're not a big boxing fan or anything. Did you hear anything about that fight or at the gym or anything like that?
No, not really.
You know,
no, I am. I mean, I know what I've read on the internet, you know, and what some people have said to me that, you know, I spend a lot of time around our business, but, you know, from just the general public, like at the gym where I work, no, I really haven't. You know, but you mentioned not selling that, you know, I didn't mention, nor did you, that after the night, the Monday after the pay-per-view, Cena, who bled quite a bit on the pay-per-view, never even had a Band-Aid on his forehead when he came back.
No.
That was another point of bone of contention. So, you know, it's, again, I continually say to young men, it's the little things that make the big things work. And somebody else, you know, what I just said to you now, let's say you and I are sitting up halfway up the side of one, you know, that Coliseum, and maybe several people around us didn't notice it, but you say loud enough to me, hey, he was bleeding last night. Maybe that wasn't real blood. He doesn't even have a Band-Aid on. Somebody hears you say it, they say it to a friend, and who says it to another person, who then goes home and say, hey, you weren't there, did you watch on TV? He didn't. So you've planted the seed. And word of mouth is one of the best or worst advertisements that you can get. And that, to me, is one of those little things that does or does not make the big things work.
Another thing about, talk about a little thing, I got to get this in here. I know you didn't hear anything about the UFC on Fox show on Saturday or two Saturdays
ago. I watched
it. Because, did you? You were one of the few, apparently. You were one of the few, apparently. A disastrous rating number for Fox, unfortunately. Well, really, not unfortunately for Fox, but very unfortunately for the UFC, which I don't think should be surprised with the lineup that they gave, which was a hardcore fans lineup. But what did you think about the show and you know, some of the action on there?
It was, the show was, you know, I mean, there were no fighters on there that I was particularly, you know, that much into. Diaz, you know, of course, you know, I've heard all the controversy about him. But, you know, in terms of look, Mike, as a fan, opposed to being an expert at that particular sport, he doesn't look impressive. I mean, he really doesn't. You know, I mean, at his weight class, he's not in extremely good shape. He doesn't have great broad shoulders. You know, I don't know. I just wasn't that impressed with him as a fighter, honestly. What's-his-face, Krawczyk, of course. You know, I know that name. But, I mean, It was entertaining. It was the big heavyweight at the first. You know, that was probably, you know, from a just a viewer standpoint. Again, not technically. I don't really understand the sport, and I won't pretend to. You know, from the way I understand professional wrestling, but the big heavyweight that won that first match on Fox, I thought was probably more impressive than anybody else I watched on the damn thing.
Had a hell of a story, too, didn't it? I mean, I not that I remembered it as soon as they said it, but, you know, I think the name LeVar Johnson now, I kind of forgot about the fact that he was almost killed in a drive-by shooting. And for that to be the first thing, I went over to my parents' house, and my mom does not like fight sports that much. We'll always kind of linger into it because my stepfather and I watch, and he didn't know anything about LeVar Johnson, and they both kind of, you know, their jaws kind of dropped listening to that story, and they were just, you know, kind of shook their head where, you know, that was a great story to tell. And, you know, talk about the physiques on guys. You know, Nate Diaz and his brother Nick are both triathletes and everything. And, I mean, incredibly great shape, great athletes, whole nine yards. But much like the old saying goes, chicks dig the long ball. There's a reason that heavyweight fights and heavyweight fighters sell so well, and why boxing's in the position that it's in, because unless you have a very charismatic person or you've given the viewer a reason to care about the guy in there, it's just the way it is that 145 to 175, 80-pound guy is going to look that way coming across on TV. It's still, you know, they like heavyweights. And I that's one thing I don't think the UFC did well at all leading to this show is give me a reason to really care about Josh Koscheck against Johnny Hendricks. You know, give the fans a reason, a build to this on Fox and in other programming where, you know, they did it for the very first one on there. They always ran specials during football season. They really, you know, they did drop these guys into different places, and they didn't do that with this one. And even still with that, to get a 1.5 on a Saturday night was a really, I think, is a huge wake-up call to both Fox and the UFC. You know, regardless, I'm sure they'll take the WWE approach and say, well, we were number one in our 18 to 34 male demographic, but I don't know if that really means anything right now, but I don't know.
Well, you know, Saturday night is not a strong television. I mean, if you look at what the other networks put on, mostly it's reruns, right? I mean, it's because they realize that probably the demographic you just mentioned is not home anyway, you know, and I realize, you know, I don't know how they grade the DVR, you know, type of thing, but so Saturday night is not a strong night. But I think if you want to make me be sure to watch it or make me be sure to record it if I've already had plans to go out, then I think, you know, there's got to be some you know, some mainstream names put in there. And I think for the, you know, because I read on the websites or because I listen to you guys or I listen to Dave and Brian, you know, then I know some of these names, or because I've watched The Ultimate Fighter or, you know, or some of the specials. Other than that, I think the casual viewer, even if they're interested in MMA, what names are there right now? You know, you got Randy as an announcer, Lesnar's in the WWE, Ortiz is not on the docket, you know, Shamrock. I mean, so there's not, you know, for the casual person, there's no household names, I guess would be a way to put it, right?
Oh, absolutely. And then, you know, you compound it by going, Anderson Silva's a name, Chael Sonnen's a name, you need them for pay-per-view. You're going to draw your money that way. George St. Pierre hurt. Uriah Faber is supposed to face Dominic Cruz. I guess they'll announce it on this Friday's Ultimate Fighter. Dominic Cruz just tore his ACL. So, I don't know what the plan is going to be. I know Brian Stand, who did the announcing on that show, Marine, great guy, good fighter, fighting Hector Lombard from Bellator. I think after this rating, they're going to pull a switch for that September show that they have coming up, and that cannot be the only thing on it. It just cannot be. They're going to have to load it up with some name, and they're going to have to, unfortunately for them, sacrifice a pay-per-view draw or somebody that would help assist in a pay-per-view to be on that show. It's just the way it's got to be, because that's going to be their last chance. You're going into football season, and Fox has got a grand plan. As you said, Saturday night is not a good TV night, and they've got a grand plan when it comes to live sports, lots of baseball, lots of different things mixed in there, and the UFC could face losing that spot on network TV. They won't disappear from the Fox family of networks, but their shot on Saturday night nationwide every quarter may really take a beating if they don't do something in that August or September show, whenever it is. I believe it's late August. But,
well, you know, you mentioned Brian Stann and the whole, you know, back his Marine background and so forth. And I won't say that the patriotism thing won't fly in this day and age, but it can't fly if you don't have a platform to advertise. I mean, it's not like this is Sergeant York we're talking about, you know. So he may have a great background and a great story, like the guy with the drive-by shooting. But if you're going to put him on Fox, then Fox has to run some of those pre-fight specials or in some way make the casual viewer, someone that might just have a smidgen of interest, give them more interest. You know, and if you're going to do it with a patriotic thing, then you've got to sell who this guy is. Besides, he's a Marine, which tells you exactly what.
Absolutely.
You know?
Yeah, and that's, they did that for Dos Santos and Velasquez, where, you know, if you got, not to bore everybody with this, I know we got George South coming up here very shortly, not to bore everybody with this, but, you know, during 1 o'clock, you get blackouts during football. You can't have sometimes, you can't have back-to-back doubleheaders in weeks, so say CBS has got a game at 1 and 4, and Fox in your area has got a game at 4, well, at 1 o'clock they were running countdown specials leading into the free show. And I think whatever bullet needs to be bit, and whoever's got to pay for it, you know, and it may fall more onto the UFC in this, I think they desperately need to do that coming up for that show because, again, I don't know why Fox had an 8-year deal. The UFC will be on the Fox family, but if they're not on network TV, again, there's still a lot licensed in New York. You know, the interest of the UFC and the network touching the UFC again is going to be hurt, I think, for quite some time, but we do actually need to throw it to break here because we don't want to have George hanging on for too long here. So we're going to be right back with George South right after this.
This is Paul Stanley from Kiss for Red, recording artists, actors, and athletes against drunk driving. Some of us work months producing a CD, but in less time than it takes to play it, someone will be killed in an alcohol-related crash. So please don't drive when you've been drinking. Plan ahead. Arrange a designated driver. Remember, friends don't let friends drive drunk.
A public service message brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAG, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
Hi, I'm Drew Brees, NFL quarterback for the New Orleans Saints, here with Bugs Bunny to remind you to get moving every day.
Because when you get moving an hour a day,
you fuel your body and your mind.
So what do you like to throw around the football like Drew?
Skateboard, ride a bike, or dance in your room.
Just move it your way.
And be a player.
Get up and play an hour a day, Doc. Check out how to be a player at letsmove.gov.
Head online to get tips on great ways to get moving every day.
At letsmove.gov. A message from the Ad Council and HHS.
Do you remember Tommy Rich? What about Red Gunkel or Gordon Solie? Can't get those nasty Anderson brothers out of your head? Well, you can catch them again at GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Who was on the first card you attended? Who was it under that mask? Remember the first Omni Spectacular or the big main events at the Bell Auditorium? That happened in Columbus on my birthday. Find out at GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Whether you want to get back some of your past, or maybe you just want to find pro wrestling in your area, check out GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com.
Hello there, I'm Leanne Womack. There's so much that kids have to be good at these days. It's hard to think ahead and realize how something like learning music can help them. Music helps kids because it's a performing art, and performing well is something that children need to learn to take part in society. Getting an 85% on a math test is pretty good, but hitting 85% of the notes in a song during a concert isn't good enough for most music students or their teachers. The kind of practice and preparation that goes into the discipline of performing music helps kids develop habits that will allow them to perform better in all areas of their lives.
A PSA brought to you by MENC, the National Association for Music Education, Gibson Guitar, Baldwin Piano, and this station. March is Music in Our Schools Month. Music, part of a sound education.
If you're hurt, get the money you deserve. If you're in pain, get the money you deserve. At Terry and Peterman, we're personal injury attorneys who take a professional, thorough approach to your accident and injury claims. Don't call some long-distance law firm or satellite office. Don't trust your claim to just anyone. For a free consultation, call the law office of Terry and Peterman today, 229-247-0386, or go online at www.terryandpeterman.com. The law offices of Terry and Peterman, making things right.
I present to you three of the fiercest subjects ever assembled in the Cage of Doom. First, the brain-wrenching behemoth Algebra 2, weighing in at a mind-boggling 800 pounds. Foreign languages! The multilingual international sensation capable of tossing you clear across the Atlantic. And finally, biology. More ferocious than formaldehyde, she'll dissect you one chromosome at a time. Who among you will step up to their challenge?
Yeah, I'll do it.
Me too.
I'm in.
Sign me up.
Take on the tough classes now. You need them to prepare for college. Find out which classes you need at knowhowtogo.org.
Brought to you by the American Council on Education, Lumina Foundation for Education, and the Ad Council.
All right, we're back here on Ringside Rap, the legendary Les Thatcher, along with me, Mike Sempervivi, and we'd like to welcome to the program a longtime familiar face to those out there, especially those of you who are in my age group, around 30 to 40 years old, maybe a little bit older.
Nice.
They can remember sitting there on Saturdays watching Crockett and Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling, and was a fixture on every single show, and Mr. George South is on with us, and gets to write a book, just wrote a book, a biography about his long life in professional wrestling entitled Daddy, You Don't Work, You Wrestle, which can be ordered at georgesouth.com and ringsiderap.com. And, George, how are you this evening?
Buddy, I'm doing great, man. How you and Les doing? I appreciate y'all having me on here, buddy.
I'm going to tell you something. I sat here and listened to that lead-in music, and I thought, what the hell does the Beastie Boys have to do with George South?
If I'm not playing
Hank Williams Jr. or something, Rich is drunk, I think, at the wheel there, George. I'm not sure.
I know. I tell you, I'm just so thankful for y'all guys, man. And I tell you what, you know, we've always, Les, as you know, over the years, just made notes on back of popcorn boxes and napkins and just many, many years of notes. And, you know, I never slowed down long enough to think that this would ever, just come to an end. But I tell you, I met Mark James at FanFest, guys, in Charlotte, and we just got to talking first time I met him and told him that I'd always had a dream of putting a book together, and he said, well, do it. And, you know, in all these years, that's the first time somebody said, well, let's just do it. And I tell you, Mark will get a Medal of Honor because he's put up with me for a whole year, let me tell you, Les. So, but, buddy, it's finished, and I'm so excited. I tell you, Mike, about 5 years ago, there was a guy close right outside of Charlotte that was a editor, publisher, and I went and sat down in his house, and I gave him what I had. My little rough draft, and that fellow looked right at me. After about 5 minutes, he said, you write like I wrestle. And I was about ready to punch that guy, but I grabbed up my stuff and was so mad that he didn't even, you know, look at it real good or anything. So, about put it away then and said, I'll just, you know, keep my memories and how much I loved, you know, Mid-Atlantic and pro wrestling and all that. And but then when I met Mark, I just got so excited. So it's here. It's here.
Well, you know, somebody asked me.
The greatest book ever written, Les Thatcher.
Somebody asked me if I'd seen George South's book. And I said, I didn't even know he could write. Never mind that I see his book.
Well, I didn't have three people tell me they didn't know wrestlers could read, much less write.
George, I know a few that couldn't. So.
I know. Well, buddy, it's here. And, many years ago, my twin girls were like maybe five or six. And, of course, every night when I'd get ready to pack and go out on the road, they wouldn't ever go to sleep. And I'd yelled across the hallway and told them to go to bed. You know, Daddy had to go to work. And one of my little twins, little smart aleck, said, Dad, you don't work, you wrestle. And I said, if I ever could write a book, that'd be a title. Because that's kind of how the world thinks, Les, you know, about us. Is,
right.
You know, you never really had a real job. You've just been playing all these years. And,
yeah.
So I put it in there, and the girls are excited. They're waiting on their royalty check. So we're going to sell some books, Les. My daughter wants her money. No, but it's just finished, and just a long, long, you know, time of some great guys. And, you know, I told Mike Mooneyham from the Charleston paper this week, I said, you know, they may not remember me when they finish, but, buddy, they're going to know some Mid-Atlantic legends. And, I mean, everyone that meant something to me, you know, just anywhere I could put their name in there, I did. And from Bob Brothers to T.O.T.O., Les. So we're covering them all, buddy, let me tell you.
Wow.
Well,
yeah,
George, that was one of the things when I saw the name of the book. I think it's got a double meaning in this day and age, because when I was growing up watching, let me tell you something, I remember the Italian Stallion, Mark Fleming, Tommy Angel, Gary Royal, George South. I remember those guys. Because they wrestled, and they were really good at what they did. And they were on there week after week, and I got emotionally invested in those guys.
That's right.
Most of the time it would be, I don't know why you get up on Hawk's shoulder or Animal's shoulders and do what you did. I could never really wrap my brain around that. But, you know, you look at this day and age where guys want to be, they're workers. And Les and I talk about this every week, and I know it drives him just nuts, where it's like, why don't you, any of you guys learn how to wrestle? You're not working You're just working your own brain. I mean, did you ever think the book has got a double meaning like that? Because that's certainly kind of how I took it.
Yeah, and you know, Mike, what was so amazing, and you know, when you think back when of course, Les and with me and guys like that, from the first match to the main event, everybody knew what they were doing. And that's what I loved about it. You're talking about just a world of knowledge and see, a lot of that's been, of course, all of it's been forgotten, really, but I would not break into business right now. I mean, I'd go collect pop bottles on the side of the road before I try to break into business now, because it's gone. And I'm holding on with both hands, but I'm going to tell you, that's what this book, there is so many. I know what it felt like to me to have to leave my kids' birthday parties. I miss many of school dances, many of high school football games, because I had to go on the road. And a lot of these guys, Ole, Wahoo, Les, of course, and Blackjack, nobody ever thanked them for that. And the last page in this book, you know, I say that I'm getting the last word, buddy, because it's my book. And I thank those guys that came before me that had to leave their families, you know, to go on the road. And nobody ever even thought, you know, yeah, so what? You don't even, that's not even a real job. I hear it to this day that we've always played. And, you know, I see a lot of these old-timers, and I'm getting that way that, you know, takes them a while to get going in the mornings. Their backs hurt. They're in a lot of pain. And, buddy, I tell you, you know, people can say a lot of things about me, Mike, but they can't say I'm not very, very thankful to what those guys. Listen, I could cure wrestling right now, Mike, let me tell you. You give me 2 weeks, and I'm going to go hire every one of the Armstrong boys, and I'm going to get Les Thatcher, and I'm going to make us all some money. That's it. We ain't going. I hear all this. They're losing money here. They're losing money there. And Les, I'm going to put you over. But people don't realize what Les did. If I hired Les Thatcher, I could fire 12 people in the front office. That's all I'm saying. And you give me
God
all the Armstrongs.
God bless you, George.
I'm telling you, Les, you give me all the Armstrongs. Even I told Brad, even Grandma Armstrong could probably throw a good arm drag. But you give me that family, and we'll jump in the back of a truck, and we'll travel, and we'll all get rich. There won't be no board meetings. There won't be no dancing girls. We'll just all go make some money. And but, you know, Mike, I laugh. I tell guys all the time, if the dressing rooms were not together, you couldn't have wrestling right now. I'm telling you, Saturday night I had my son, George Jr., with me at this show, and they put me in a ring with this guy. I didn't know who he was. And we made it a game. I did not even talk to this guy. I'd go get me a drink of water. So he followed me. Now, I'm talking, he's probably my age, 45, 50 years old. He followed me for 2 hours waiting for me to stop to talk to him about my match. And I avoided him like the plague, just on intention. Little George came up to me and said, man, Dad, how long are you going to walk around? That guy's working up a sweat waiting on you to talk to him. Naturally, we went to the ring. It was the worst thing. that I'd ever, I mean, it was awful. And poor guy, you know. But anyway, I just, you know, I tell these people I train less, I'm so tired of wrestling trying to influence them. I've trained them the way I was taught. But nobody wants to hear that, see. And, oh, I get fired up here, buddy. It's just, anyway, Mike. I'm going to be
no,
nice.
No, you're right,
I'm
George.
Okay, because I got a book out, buddy. Man. But, you know, before Sandy Scott passed away, Les, I talked to him, and he said, George, he said, wrestling has gotten over the people's heads. And, man, I'll never forget that as long as I live. Those simple words describe what wrestling is right now. It's just, oh, man, I tell you, you got to go to college to understand this mess now. And, well, we kept it simple, but, man, we drew some money, buddy. And, you know, it's just a great, great – I mean, I've had people say, well, how much darkness is in your book? And I told them, you got to be crazy. I said, there's not a bit of darkness in that book. If I knew darkness, I wasn't putting it in there because that ain't what this book's about. Listen, 30 years from now when I'm in a nursing home sitting on the front porch in a rocking chair – I want to be positive, and I want to be happy with what pro wrestling meant to me, buddy. So, anyway, I love it. I tell you, the hardest part I gave, unless you won't believe this, buddy, I gave Mark James 700 pages. He thought I'd done been hitting the head too many times. He said, we'll have to sell this book for $100 to break even. So, my problem was turning my life over to him, and he said, trust me. Now, you know, to us wrestlers, Mike, Les, that, you don't tell us that. We don't trust anybody. But I gave him my life for a year, scared to death. Didn't know what it was going to be. Now, this thing's still over a little bit over 400 pages, but he worked his magic, and I am so happy, I tell you. Because I wanted, you know, if there's a word, I mean, I wanted it the way I talk, the way I feel. You know, when I saw Wahoo smack somebody, I wanted my book to say Wahoo smack somebody. I didn't want it to say Wahoo, you know, properly, adjusted somebody's, you know, hat on their head. You know, Wahoo smacked him. You know, and that's what comes out in this book. And, you know, my grandbaby saw it today for the first time. She's 5, and she said, Papa, she said, that cover is pretty. Boy, I tell you, Les, I don't care if anybody else likes it. She liked it. So I'm happy right now, buddy.
Let me ask you a question.
That was my first review, Mike. That was my first review on the book, buddy, and I'm tickled to death.
Do you have any pictures of your Hall of Fame in there?
Yes, sir, I sure do. Yeah, I gave a whole chapter. And I tell you what I'm really fighting for. You know, this week there's a picture of me with Ric Flair that I just had made. And it was hard to chase Rick down, and I really wanted him to see this book because I give a chapter to just him. Because, Mike, Les, and y'all know this, when he finishes, my ties to what wrestling was for me, it will be gone forever. So there's still that connection. Rick is like my chain to what I grew up with. And so anyway, it's so funny, when I saw him, I've asked him to autograph so much stuff for me. First thing he said was, George, I'm not autographing anything for you. And I said, no, that ain't what I want. And I showed him this book, and I think he really liked it. And, of course, after about 5 minutes, he got ready to walk off. Les, I reached up and just grabbed his arm, and I said, no, Rick, please. I said, I want to show you. So for about 10 minutes, we had a pretty special moment there, just me and him, and I showed him in the book, and it was kind of neat. I've got a picture in there of him with Gordon Solie, and I'm talking from, you know, late 70s, I mean, early 80s. He's got those, that nice blazer on, and the hair's way out, and that U.S. belt. And he looked at it, and he said, you know, he said, then nobody would tell me no. And I started laughing. So that was a good moment for me, and so anyway, just little things like that. I just, when someone reads it, it ain't all about me. Of course, my relationship with the Lord is all through it. How somebody laying on his grandma's floor at 4 years old saw Paul Jones and Wahoo, the first match ever, Ole and Gene Anderson on TV, that sacrifice where they throwed, I think it was Wahoo's head into Gene, right on TV. And I was hooked, and then I got, and just to see how I have been blessed to get to know these guys, it's just an amazing, amazing story for me. There's nothing I ever wanted to do, Mike. I'm telling you. I had it so bad in school, and I write about this in the book. Blackjack beat Paul one Saturday for the U.S. belt. Mike, I stayed, I think I've told Les this many times, I stayed out of school for a week. I was so upset as a young boy that Paul lost the U.S. belt. I couldn't even leave the house. And I wish I had a copy of the teacher, you know, the note from home. It said George stayed out of school because Paul lost the U.S. belt. So that's how bad I had it, buddy. Let me tell you.
You know, the difference now, George, is that the fans aren't emotionally invested in what they do. It's too much a comedy act, and
that's right.
They don't take the time to get the people emotionally invested.
See, Les, I felt when Paul was going to the ring, I went to the ring. Paul, I love Paul Jones. In school, I didn't even sign my name. That's how bad I had it, guys. I would sign my name Paul Jones. Those teachers thought I was nuts, you know, and I probably was. But I had that, you know, when I went to the matches at the old Park Center here in Charlotte, it was to see Paul Jones. Oh, my gosh, because I was going to fight with him. You know, when he first turned on Steamboat here, I figured, well, heck, I'm going to have to turn. So I started being probably the most disrespectful young man you've ever been around. Because Paul was, I had to be bad. Then my brother smacked me a few times, so I sure was glad Paul turned back to a baby face. Let me tell you.
But, now, did you go the whole nine yards and all of a sudden name number one?
Listen, I've been number if I could find the records, I think I was number one before Paul was. But he's still, you know, he's the one. I remember as a kid, Les, I would bug Paul to death. He would send me to get him a cup of coffee. And I promise you, every time I'd come back, Mike, he'd be gone. Yeah, I said, man, that's so he'd get rid of me. So tell you a funny story. I wanted him to write something for my book, Les. And, you know, I tell you, and, you know, we kind of went back and forth, and Paul kind of put me off for a little bit. And I finally told him, I said, Paul, I said, you either write something for my book or I'm going to write it and sign your name to it. And boy, he got right to it then. So I've just got, you know, a lot of the guys that meant something to me were able to write something in it. And I tell you, this is just a big labor of love to me. And just what this business has, you know, meant to me. I mean, you know, I shared with Les, getting to spend time with Wahoo here in Charlotte, you know, right before he passed away. And, you know, moments like that. I mean, you know, I sat with Blackjack Mulligan on his back porch, and we ate a big bag of hamburgers and drunk Mountain Dew. Now, buddy, I'm telling you, if you'd have told me at 10 years old that one day I would be able to do that, I'm telling you, you can't put no price tag on that, guys. Just a lot of great, great stories. So I went with Paul one night. That's my last story, because ain't nobody going to buy the book, Mike, because I'm going to tell all my stories. I talked Paul Jones into managing me one night here in the Carolinas, and he said he would go. And I said, just sit there. But I used to love to take Paul Jones's punch. Even on TV, I'd have Barbarian or Abdullah throw me out on the floor, and then I'd feed Paul so he'd punch me. And because I just remember seeing him throw that punch as a kid. Well, this particular night, I was in the ring, and I yelled out to Paul. I said, listen, I'm going to grab this guy, Full Nelson, and I'm going to bring him to you, but I'm going to tell him to duck so you'll punch me. And Paul said, no. I said, what do you mean, no? He said, I'm not going to do it. So here's me and Mr. Number One Paul Jones arguing like two kids in a sandbox. Because I want him to punch me, and he said, no. And he never would. And in the dressing room, I said, Paul, why didn't you punch me? You know, I was going to have the guy duck, and you punch me. And he said, George, you know, the old timer in him, he said, it wouldn't have been good for the match. And I said, who cares about the match? I just wanted to take your punch. So just a neat, you know, people are probably going to read some of it and say, George, where did that come from? But there's a lot of things in there that I never wanted to forget. And so I got a million of those stories, but it's just a great, great book. And, And, you know, I just wanted to, you know, I thank Ole a lot. I rib Ole every time I see him that, you know, I'm still making money off of him. Any chance I get to, you know, make money, oh, boy, he gets all fired up. But, you know, I was 12 years old, and they won. They were the Mid-Atlantic Tag Champions, Les, and they won the world belts. So they had both belts. Well, Ole gets on TV and says, you know, we're world champions. We're going to take these regional belts and throw them in a dumpster in Charlotte. Me and my buddy got on a bicycle Friday, and we rode for 2 days through the trash dumpsters, Les, in Charlotte, trying to find them tag belts. And to this day, Ole says, well, I didn't tell you which dumpster, did I? And I said, no. So, Dad, burn it. And that's how much, Les, what you were saying. That was my connection, you know, to these guys.
Yeah.
You know, I go to the shows now, Les, and the sponsors will say, do you need any security? And, Mike, I actually start laughing because people don't care enough to charge the ring. Or, you know what I'm saying, Les? Like,
right,
you
sure.
Know, you don't even need security. People are sitting there, you know, texting, talking on their phones. Ain't nobody, you know, enjoying the match like we used to. And
well, you know, George, the few riots that I've been in over the years, when some kid will hear me talking about, somebody will bring it up and ask about riots. And some of these kids that work the indie, they'll look at you like, what are you talking about? Why would people get that, you know, they think those must have been barbarians, you know. No, they weren't. They were just, they got into what we were, the heels knew
they
how to get that kind of heat, and the baby faces knew how to sell it.
That's right. And see, that's what I miss, Mike, more than anything, Les, is I know how it felt. I mean, you know, when Paul Jones turned on Steamboat, well, Paul says Steamboat turned on him, so it's whichever one you believe here. But I remember it. You know, I still love Paul. Listen, when my superstar Bill Eady cut Paul Jones's hair on TV, I went the next day and got scissors, and I cut my hair. I mean, that's, you know, and I probably need to be in a straitjacket somewhere, you know, in a rubber room. But, man, I just, you know, man, I lived, eat, and breathed, you know, Paul Jones. When he went to that ring, I went to the ring. When he lost, I lost. When he bled, I bled. When he turned heel in Charlotte, he was in the ring. And I had painted a sign. I was about 15 years old. And I said, Paul Jones is still number one. So he saw me from the ring. He didn't know me, of course. But he reached down and got my sign. And he held it up. And Les, when he got done walking around the ring, he gave it back to me. I didn't have that sign in my hand 2 minutes. And then somebody threw beer on me. And at 15 years old, you know, they hated Paul. But I didn't know what was going on. Next thing I know, somebody threw a hot dog, hit me right in the head with it. And the security had to come get me out of there because the fans connected me with Paul. And I'm thinking, I'm just a fan. I'm 15, and people throwing cups at me. See, if I had that much heat, and I'm 15 years old just holding a sign, you imagine how much they hated. But see, it wasn't just how much they hated Paul. It's how much they loved Steamboat because Paul turned on their hero. And but, you know, in my book, I say, Les, ain't it amazing how everybody kind of hates wrestling till they want to get free tickets? That's just always amazed me.
Yeah.
You know, nobody really wants to admit that they love pro wrestling, and the ones that, you know, hate it, boy, but they sure don't hate it if they got a chance to get some free tickets. And so there's a chapter in there about that, too. So, but anyway, just some great stuff. And, you know, dreams do come true. I know that's a corny saying, and, you know, I thank so many people in here. I mean, I love Dusty. I tell in a book, you ask my kids right now where they lived, and it was American Dream Boulevard, buddy. Let me tell you, that's where they lived. Dusty Rhodes took good care of me. I kept all of them, Les, but I put five of my check stubs in this book from Jim Crockett. And out of those five, the lowest one is $2,000. Now, this is George South. That just got beat up every week, as everybody said. So if my checks were that, what did some of these guys make? So it was a great, great time. JJ took so good care of me. And you know, that's why, buddy, I'll take up for all that. You know, I get mad when people say Dusty killed Mid-Atlantic Wrestling because they sure wasn't nobody complaining around here when they were cashing in big checks. So I was blessed, buddy. That's all I can say. I could talk about it all night long, but those guys were so good to me. I mean, and even before then, you know, my first TV was Georgia Championship Wrestling from Ole. Man, I'd called before and Buzz Sawyer answered, and I hung up. He scared me to death, Les. But then I don't know how I got on TV, but I was there, buddy. And, you know, my first TV match ever, I kicked out of Jerry Lawler's famous fist drop. I didn't know no better. You don't think Ole didn't cuss me out? But I promise you I never kicked out of that fist drop again after Ole cussed me out. So, and see, that's the thing now. When I see these guys mess up and do so much stupid stuff, I wish they was an Ole. I wish there was an Ole or a Devil Blue at Tony Marino really gave me a hard time, but I learned from it. I've not forgot any of that. I can't even remember my kid's name, but I can remember the last time Ole Anderson cussed me out because I had so much respect for him and still do. Oh, my gosh, still do. I'll call him now and tell him, you know what? I just wish I could have tagged with Wahoo against you and Gene. And, boy, that gets him started. Boy, Les, I can't get him to quit cussing me out then. But, anyway, it's just a great, great thing, and I just love it. And that's what I want people to get from this book. It ain't about anything but what pro – well, and I say it in there. I mean, I work for them all. 1 week, there's a couple weeks I work for Bill Watts, Vince McMahon, and Jim Crockett all in the same week. But it was always Mid-Atlantic for me. When we went to Kansas City for a while and came back, I write in my book about just hearing Bob Caudle and Johnny Weaver talk about me getting beat up. Les, that was music to my ears, buddy.
Well, you know what, George, there was an art to that, too. You know, I was talking to somebody just today I said the problem with trying to get guys over in WWE is there nobody that knows how to get them over.
That's right.
There's no specialist. You know that. I mean, that's how many years did Johnny Heidemann make a good living doing jobs for getting guys over? I hate calling it doing jobs because they knew how to get you over and still maintain some semblance of credibility themselves.
Yeah, that's right. And see that a lot of people say their favorite match of mine was when I worked Ric Flair at Techwood Drive many years ago, and we went about 15 minutes on TV, and they said, you know, for a moment there, we thought that you were going to win. And that's the greatest compliment that I think anybody could give one of us guys, and it was all Rick. I mean, it was just, you know, golly, if you can't have a good match with him. But I still hear fans to this day. Just tell me that for a moment they thought I was going to win. And I love that. I mean, but you don't, you know, a blind man now could tell you who's going to win on this WWF stuff. And it's just different. I mean, I think the respect there is still for some of the older guys and some of the younger guys coming up. But, you know, it goes from the boots you wear. When I was a kid, I asked David Crockett at the matches, Les, where y'all got your wrestling boots at? David Crockett cussed me up one wall and out the other, because you didn't even ask that. I mean, if you was a fan or a mark, you didn't even ask that. And I miss days like that. I can talk to Abe Jacobs. He still lives here in Charlotte, Les. And, you know, I can talk to Abe even now, and he'll look around and see who's around us when we're talking. And all that gives me goosebumps right now, you know. And I just love that. And it's just the biggest difference for me is I miss the closeness, the fellowship that you had with the boys. And,
yeah.
You know, I remember when Ricky Morton got some single matches against Rick, we were all so happy for Ricky Morton because we all knew, buddy, that it was going to draw good and we were all going to make good money. And now I could just hear guys saying, that should have been me. You know, in the ring with Ric Flair instead of Ricky Morton. That's what they would do now. But we were just all, I put it in the book that we all spent more time with each other than we did our own families.
Right,
And, you know, we did. And I depended on everybody. And see, that's like now. I tell my students, when back in our day, Les, and my kids get tired of me saying that, but you know, if me and Les was working the same territory and I got in a dressing room with him, the last thing we talked about was wrestling. Mike, that's how it worked. I'd ask Les how his family was. He'd ask me how our kids were, how you been. That's what we talked about when we saw each other. We didn't sit over in a corner for 2.5 hours talking over a match. Oh, my gosh. I couldn't do that. I don't want to do that. And I don't get it. I've seen guys talk for 4 hours over a match, and the match only went 10 minutes. They spent more time talking it over than it happened. And I touch on some of that stuff like that. I get so tickled, you know. Back in the day when we shook hands, Les, and we saw each other, it was genuine. We were glad to see each other. Now these little outlaw guys have heard that, you know, you pinch each other with two fingers when you shake, and I hate that. I just the funniest thing on me is I usually take my wrestling ring, Les, and I've got two pieces of plywood on my back, and some guys come over and try to shake my hand. I'm thinking, buddy, you better get away from me. And it's just, all I want this book to do, guys, is hold on to what we had, Les. And as long as I can breathe, you know, I've got one page in my book, I call it Groceries. And everybody says, Groceries? What the heck? But I call it Groceries, and out beside it, I said, with these guys on my show, I'm buying some. So I give my 10. And then, of course, I couldn't stop there, so at the bottom, I put more groceries. Because I got a lot of kids at home, and then I list 10 more. So I've got, and of course, a lot of people may disagree, but, you know, it's a top 20 list, but I put Steamboat and Youngblood right beside each other. Because to me, I can't say one of them. It's like Jack and Jerry Briscoe. In my book, I couldn't write about one without writing about the other, Les. You understand? You know?
Sure.
And them two just always went together for me.
You know, so, George, I don't know that these kids... I don't know if these kids understand the loose handshake, but, Mike, the deal was back in the day, if someone said, well, you know, let me introduce you to my friend Les Thatcher, my friend George South, they're a wrestler, that person, when they shook your hand, they wanted to see if they could break it or squeeze it. They thought that they had to do that masculine thing to prove that, you know, so we... You know, it was like a fraternity thing. We shook hands loose.
That's right.
It was a way of saying, I'm with it. I'm one of the boys.
That's
and,
right.
And, of course, most of the kids that shake hands like that, they aren't with it anyway.
That's right. Well, I saw we had 400 people was in line to meet Ric Flair, and we were kind of standing beside him, helping him, you know, getting his books and stuff ready. And this was last year, and some outlaw guy come over and reached over the table with two little fingers like he was going to, you know, shake Rick's hand, and I saw Rick get right up off that table and come around, and he stopped that whole line. And he told that guy, I said, don't you ever shake my hand like that again. And I loved it. You know, other people didn't know what was going on, but I loved it because, like you said, Les, just this past Saturday, it was a fundraiser for the police. And when I got down with the ring, I wanted to meet some of the police officers. And them guys, I don't know if they thought they better show me right away that they're tough. My hand's been soaking in water for 3 days. They about broke my fingers.
Yeah.
I just said, guys, come on, man. So now a lot of the guys, I won't even shake their hand. But I just think stuff like, you know, I'll have a ring post on my shoulder, and guys will follow me as I put that ring post down because they've heard that that's what us wrestlers used to do. And it's just another little thing that, you know, that's gone. I tell you, the other week, Ricky Morton, me and him was at a town, and we got there right at bell time. We came from another show, and so Ricky had grabbed him a chair and took it back out in the dressing room, Les, and put his stuff, you know, put his chair at his little locker, put his shoes, his toothbrush, all the stuff down, and he goes on out to his gimmick table. So I was getting dressed. I looked over. Here come a ring announcer, and didn't even look. He just grabs Ricky Morton's chair, takes it out there to his table. I thought, uh-oh, this ain't going to be good. So Ricky Morton comes back. He said, where's my chair? I said, Funky, I said, that ring announcer got it. And I said, oh, gosh. So Ricky goes out, and it was the greatest thing I ever seen, Les, in a respectful way. Ricky Morton went to that ring announcer and explained to him that, buddy, when one of the guys has their stuff there in that chair, you don't go near that chair. And so in my book, I put, there's three things you don't do. I said, you don't step on Elvis's Bruce Wade shoes. you don't spit in the wind, and you don't take Ricky Morton's chair. Because, buddy, and it was just that little respect thing, and the announcer was very, very, you know, he was very apologetic. But, see, something like that, you know, I can remember Johnny Hunter here in the Carolinas. He had brought Lou Thesz in one time, and Lou Thesz was a little bit older, and I had the opportunity to work Lou Thesz. I've even got a picture of me with Lou Thesz, but I went up to him and started telling Lou Thesz, of all people, what, you know, I was 18 years old, man. I thought I was something. And I go up to Lou Thesz, and I'm going to tell Lou Thesz what I'm going to do in the match. Before I could get two words out, he told me to shut up. That's it. He just said, shut up. And, you know, I did. I shut up. You know, and I didn't question nothing. And we got out there, and I learned right then. I mean, he was so strong. I got a picture of me against the original Sheik in here. And I did, you know, I was told shut up a lot when I first started in this business. I was just so excited. But just, what you know, I say in the book that I miss Bulldog Brower. I miss the Mongols. I miss the difference of all the guys, Les. You know, there was something for everybody.
Right.
And I tell you, it's one of my last stories, Les. I know we got to get off here, but I was walking through the floor here the other day, looked down, my kid's playing with his wrestling figures, Mike. And it was like eight figures laying in the floor, and they all had a big old tattoo on their back, action figures. I said, Garrett, I said, who bought you all them Brock Lesnar's? And he said, Daddy, he said, them's not all Brock Lesnar's. He said, there's eight different guys. And he names them. And I stopped for a minute, and I said, that's what's wrong with wrestling. Everybody, Les, looks the same. Looks the same. Now, they all look like $1 million. But they all look the same. And I miss that. Man, they used to be something for, you know, they used to be something for everybody. And but I got some great stories. I got a pastor friend here that years ago when Gene Anderson was alive, he went into Hardee's. And Gene Anderson and the great Kabuki was in Hardee's eating a gravy biscuit. Now, can you imagine that, Les? So this preacher friend goes up and asks Gene for an autograph. And Gene says, well, do you have an ink pen? And this preacher has a $25 ink pen that the church had given him right when he got into the ministry. So he gives the ink pen to Gene. Gene signs a napkin. And then Gene puts the ink pen in his shirt pocket. And, and my pastor friend says, guess what I did, George? I said, what? He said, absolutely nothing. He said, I let Gene have that ink pen. And, I, you know, little stories like that, you know, if you knew Gene and, he said, yes. Did Gene find that napkin? And then he just put my $25 ink pen right in his shirt pocket. And he said, guess what I did? Nothing. So little nitbits like that all through the book. I call my last chapter the Battle Royal. And it's just what guys have meant to me. And, of course, I ain't going to tell what I wrote about Les Thatcher. He's going to have to wait read it himself. But
I've got to buy a book, right, George?
Well, you got that right. Let's got to buy a book so I can't tell it. You know, and it's just there's certain guys. You know, unless you're like, you know, you've been like this. You know, there's guys that may have treated other guys bad, but all I've done my whole career, Mike, is go on how the guys have treated me. And you know, some of the best guys I've got, other guys, I mean, some of my best friends, other people may not stand them. But then I got a lot of funny stuff in it. I've seen stuff in this business, just in the, you know, the little time I've been in it, that just don't make sense. You know, they had a Charlotte, you know, Mayberry RFD, the big, you know, the big, it's big here still, Andy Griffin shows, and, of course, his deputy, Barney Fife. There's a guy here that actually makes a great living doing the Barney Fife gimmick. I mean, he's got, man, he's even got the one bullet in his pocket. Looks just like Don Knotts. Me and him was doing an autograph session one time, and ain't nobody in his line. Now, they're in my line because I got masks, I got championship belts, pitchers, and I guess he got a little jealous, so I hear him start telling everybody, Les, that he used to wrestle as Mr. Wrestling. Buddy, listen, you can insult Don Knotts, but you ain't going to insult Tim Woods. I'm going to tell you that right now. So I put a stop to it. I mean, I couldn't believe it. And he was trying to be serious. I said, buddy, listen, not only are you not Tim Woods, Mr. Wrestling, but you're not even a real Don Knotts. And then, so here is me and this actor getting ready to go at it, and the people and the kids are stuff thinking, what in the world is going on here? But I just, you know, I just thought, buddy, you know, that's one thing you ain't going to do is because I, you know, and I tell you, in my book, I there's a funny line in there where I say, Les, I wish years ago I would have trademarked the name of the assassin or the Bolos. Because y'all know as well as I do, Mike, everybody you meet said their uncle's brother used to be a Bolo.
Right.
Everywhere I go. Well, you know, my uncle used to be one of the assassins. I say, no, he wasn't. And it's like I'm the bad guy. But I just, you know, all that just means so, you know, so much to me. And I hope people, they may, you know, think, George, you're whacked out, buddy. We don't want the book. But I'm just excited about it. I'm going to. You know, there's one thing, you know, when I make an illustration about seeing guys jump off the rope and stuff, and I said, well, that reminds me of the way T.O. used to do. You know, he'd give somebody a bump, and he'd jump up and do a little split leg and touch his hands with his feet. And I know people
right.
are going to say, who in the world was T.O.? But if they get on that Internet, and that's all my hope is, they get on that Internet and they start looking at maybe Bob Ruggers or even old Bill White or some guys like that, Les, it just, to me, meant a whole lot, you know, to me. And I wrote it for the guys, too. I mean, I just, you know, I, of course, Blackjack, I mean, he meant so much to me. And, you know, I guess when it's done, Les, and people put, you know, they close the book. Of course, I had Ted DiBiase write the main forward. Ted DiBiase wrote it for me. And,
right.
you know, if he puts his name on something, it better have a little bit of credibility. I write about training, you know, Steamboat's boy a little bit and getting my hands in that just a little bit. And, you know, right in here, if you think you've been intimidated, wait till you're training Rick Flair's son and Ricky Steamboat's son, and both of their daddies are standing at ringside watching. Now, that's intimidation, buddy, let me tell you.
Yeah.
But you know, I just want people to say, man, here's a guy that just watched wrestling, Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling on TV, and I knew then that's all I ever wanted to do. I'd sell popcorn. I'd do anything in the world. And then to be in a Mid-Atlantic Championship ring, it was the greatest thing in the world for me. And people have laughed, and they said, George Sal, you know, you ain't, man, how many matches? You know, you lost every week. And they don't get it. You know, who cares? You
right.
know, I think there's guys now in the business that really think they win, you know. And I laugh. I said, but listen. And I told JJ that night I met him. I mean, I saw him at a show a couple years ago. I said, JJ, thank you. Because of you and Dusty and the Crockett Promotions, I bought a house. And I ain't bragging. It's just pro wrestling did that for me. And I'm very, very appreciative of it. I tell you, I have nothing. People say, man, George, it's just all positive. I know you saw some stuff. But that's not what my life is about, and that's not what pro wrestling and some of the guys. You know, I got a text on my phone right now. 3 days before Dr. Death died, I just texted him and told him I was praying for him, and I loved him. And he texted me back, and he passed away 3 days later. And, you know, that stuff like that, you know, people that ain't in our business, like you said, Les, that brotherhood and that fraternity, that they'll never understand what I'm talking about.
No,
but there are
right,
moments
George.
Like that I'll cherish, and, you know, I mean, I'll cherish the rest of my life. I mean, I saw two guys from Florida work Rotundo and Dr. Death on TV, and these guys were cocky and juiced up, and after the match, they started yelling at Rotundo and Dr. Death because they thought the match should have been better. It took 5 seconds, Mike, till Rotundo and Dr. Death, they crammed these two big guys in a trash can. I mean, I'm talking the way you see on Coyote and Roadrunner. You know when a guy's bent over and both his arms and legs are sticking out of the same hole? I was thinking, you know, if you're going to jump on somebody, I don't think Rotundo and Dr. Death are the two you jump on. So they wasn't nobody safe from my book. If I saw something good like that, buddy, it's in there. Let me tell you. So I probably need to be quiet and let us get on, but it's just a great read.
See,
of course, last year there in my Battle Royal section, and it's just I just met a lot of great people, and I'm never going to forget them. I'm never going to forget what Mid-Atlantic Wrestling meant to me and just, you know, gosh, just being in the ring. First time I was in the ring, I looked over and saw, you know, Paul Jones. I mean, I tell you, I went back, you know, 15 years to what that meant to me. Seeing, you know, him on TV. And, of course, Wahoo, and then like Les said, my little museum here. You know, Susan Green, who, this is my last story, I promise, Les, and we're getting off here. This is how great the good Lord is. The very first match, Les, I ever went to, ever as a kid, was 1975 at the Charlotte Memorial Stadium. It was Wahoo and Paul against Ole and Gene. And my good friend Dick Bourne of the Gateway, he said, George, when do you think that was? I said, well, I just know it was 1975. And to my surprise, he went back on his Mid-Atlantic Gateway site, and Les, he found the exact newspaper clipping from that night.
Yeah.
And he sent it to Mark James without me knowing it. So here it is. I get my first copy of the book, and I'm looking through these early pages, and, buddy, there is that newspaper clipping from 1975. And that's the first time I ever met Susan Green. I tell her to this day, I fell in love with her at 10 years old, and I've been trying to marry her ever since. She's going to laugh at me, but she just sent me a ring jacket, Les, because she said she wanted to give something to my little museum here at the house.
Right.
And I will cherish that, just because it's such a connection. You know, in my little old brain, I want to think that that's the jacket she wore in 1975 when I was eating popcorn. You know, so anyway, I just
let me ask you a question about the museum. Let me ask you a question about the museum.
Okay.
Now, Mike, I'm going to tell you, he's got it's a garage, but it's packed full of stuff. You spend 3 hours in there and still not see everything. But when I was there a few years ago, I was honored. George invited me out to show me his museum. And it had spilled over into his wife's dining room. Now, have the wife and the kids moved down the street so the museum has more room in the house now, George?
Oh yeah, I got three rooms now. You know, it's like your 8x10 of your family. When the family leaves, you just flip it over and there's Steamboat and Youngblood. See, you know, it's like one of these Scooby Doo movies. When the kids leave, I just switch the walls out. And there's Wahoo's headdress, or Blackjack's boots. So I've kind of calmed it down. Even Dick Bourne said, George, did you really need, the Outsiders bubble gum for your museum? I said, well, I've even got a WWF bowling ball. Don't even ask me how I got it or what it was there for, but I've got an official, maybe the only one in the world, an official WWF bowling ball.
Mike, I've seen stuff in that garage that I didn't even know existed. It was a box of cereal with WCW cereal with Sting on it. I said, where the hell did this come from? I never even knew there was such a thing.
What made that special, Mike, is it was so bad tasting, it never made it to the grocery stores. So now that's speaking up for WCW. That really did. They were three. Goldberg was on one, and Bret Hart was on the other. And it was so bad tasting, they never put it in the stores. So I don't know if that's good or bad. So a lot of little neat stuff like that. I tell you what means so much. Steamboat, Les, owned not just his Mid-Atlantic gym, but he owned a gym up 77.
Up the Lake Norman.
Right around the Lake Norman area.
Yeah.
And he'd closed it years ago. Well, probably about 6 months ago, I had a lady contact me. And she was in charge of this warehouse in Charlotte. And she Googled Steamboat sign on the Internet, and my name came up. And she called me and said, listen, we've got a Steamboat gym sign from his latest gym that we're fixing to throw in the trash. And she said, do you want it? And Les, I ain't got no truck. You should have saw me. I took an old van up there and bungee cord, duct tape, this huge sign. I'm coming down, Interstate 77. It looked like a big sailboat, coming down the road. And I'm thinking, I had my little boy with me. He's looking over at me like, Daddy, you have lost it. Nobody in their right mind would go all the way up here to get that. But I got it. So that's probably pretty neat because there'll never be, I just added that to the museum. And so, there'll never be another one like that, And I just, I smartened up over the years. I used to just get all this stuff for me. But now I've had it autographed to my kids. So it means a little bit more to them, some of the newer stuff, because long after Dad's gone, I think they may hold on to it. But, Les, if there's a huge yard sale at the Headlock Ranch after I die, now you get down here and get all this stuff, okay?
All right.
Don't let my kids put this stuff on eBay, I'm telling you.
I got you, George.
Hey, George, I think what you need to do is stop being so depressed and come out of your shell here a little bit. You know, because now
I used to be this outgoing, fun-loving guy, and then, you know, these independent outlaw guys drove me back in the shell. So, I love when I get to these shows, Les, and there's guys in the ring, you know, practicing their bumps before a show. And they did it Saturday. I think it's comical, you know. I always tell, matter of fact, Jimmy Vaillant loved this. I had a sign made up, Les, that when I do a ring rental, I'll hang it on the side of my ring that says, if you can't work by now, quit. You know, I tell these guys, you know, they don't understand, but I'll say, you know, the object of our business is to not take bumps, you know, not get in there and practice. And, they'll follow me or I get that last pole set up, Mike. And then they asked me, said, can we get – and usually I've got it swept out. I've got the ropes tight. I got it looking beautiful. And it's so bad now in these Carolina shows, I can't even leave to go get a bite to eat. I come back, and it's like a herd of ants in that ring. And I don't do it no more. I tell them, buddy, listen, this is a ring rental for a show. If you ain't got it by now, you ain't going to get it. And they get hot at me. You know, it's funny watching them storm off. It's like, you know, buddy – I'm serious. If you don't know what you're doing by now, we're in trouble. Man, we're in trouble.
Yeah.
And
I
I'm going to fight that every step of the way. I tell you, there are a lot of guys in East Carolina get aggravated with me, but I'm going to tell you, there's just a right way. Sometimes I don't even use the word old school, Mike. To me, there's just a right way and a wrong way. And I know now a lot of these guys say, well, there's old school, new school. I say, no, there's not. Les, what we did back then, what Johnny Valentine did, to me, still works now.
Yes.
And I came off the rope Saturday, and a guy throwed up. And now, Les, don't have a heart attack. A guy was going to give me an elbow. A guy throwed up his left elbow. His left elbow now hit me right in the mouth. And I stopped the whole match right there. I said, It's inhumanly possible for you to do an elbow with the left elbow. What was you thinking? And he said, well, that's just the way I always done it. And I said, no, it's wrong. Oh, my gosh, it's wrong. I said, somebody should have yelled at him way before I did. I saw a WCW guy, and I put this in the book. One night he went to do a sleeper on a guy, and Bill Eddy was there, and he did it wrong. And he busted the guy's lip and all that, and they came back in the dressing room, and the guy with his lip bleeding. This was a guy in WCW that was under contract. He was making big money on TV every week. He busted the guy's lip. And the guy asked him, said, man, don't you know how to do a sleeper? And the guy, WCW guy said, well, that's how I do it. And I saw Bill Eady get up, who never says anything to anybody, got up, and he walked across that room right to that guy, and he said, listen, you don't do it the way you do it. He said, you do it the right way. And see, that's what this business needs, Les. I'm telling you. See, now everybody is, well, you know, WWE, TNA, you know, you can't correct anybody. I mean, heck, if you do, you know, I can say it because they can't fire me. But, you know, you can't fire guys. And, you know, nobody wants to hear. See, I always wanted to be told what I'd done wrong. I really
did.
Well,
that's the only way you get it right, George, is somebody tell you what you're doing wrong. But
that's
you know
right.
What you're saying. I tell kids. I said I don't teach the old way or the new way. I teach the right way.
Oh, I love that, Les. No, that's exactly right. And I'm telling you, it you know, people can't give me DVDs of stuff now. I went over at WrestleMania with my son. Well, main reason is because he paid for it. But anyway, that's a different story. But I go over there. And I was going to sit there with a Mountain Dew and a piece of pizza, and I was going to watch WrestleMania with my son. Les Thatcher, after about the second match, I was praying that my cell phone would ring so I could tell my son it was an emergency and I had to leave. I never, you know, and I know they're making billions. Listen, I tell these, you can have $1 million in the bank, don't mean you know what you're doing. I mean it, Les. I tell my students, I can be living under a bridge with my Mid-Atlantic Wrestling magazines. But I'm going to tell you, I know what I'm doing a little bit because I learned from y'all, Les. I learned from those guys that I love so much. And, you know, that's the thing. Once you get it, you got it. problem is, you know, people think just because they're making $1 million a week that they know what they're doing. And,
right.
And, you know, they don't. See, I never wanted, Mike, I never wanted to be an idiot. I never wanted, now me and Ole rib each other or whatever. You know, a couple months before Gary Hart died, I worked the Fan Fest, and I went out in the first match and just got a little bit of heat with the crowd and had everybody laughing, and we just had fun. And Gary Hart got up, him and Humperdinck were watching the matches. And after, I was first match. Gary Hart walked in that, he walked in the dressing room, Les, and came up to me and shook my hand. He said, "You're the most entertaining thing I have seen in a while." And he said, "I'm going to my room now and go to bed." And I'm telling you, Les Thatcher, that was the greatest, I'm not patting myself on the back, but Mike, that was the greatest compliment in the world to me, to hear those words from Gary Hart. And see, and I tell my guys, y'all are, you know, some of these guys that are bad on the independent scene, I said, listen, you're never going to hear Shawn Michaels say you had a good match. You're never going to hear, you know, Les Thatcher. You're never going to hear Paul Jones say that was a pretty good match, because they just don't know, you know, and they don't want to know. That's the biggest thing.
Right,
see,
yeah.
I never, you know, I told the guy Saturday, I said, you like so-and-so, right? He's a big, like, you know, Shawn Michaels fan. Couldn't work a lick. I said, my problem is, if you love Shawn Michaels so much, don't you owe it to Shawn Michaels to learn the right way? And I swear, it was like talking to a tree stump, Les. He had no clue, Mike, what I was talking about. And see, I never wanted to embarrass Paul. I never wanted to embarrass you, Les, embarrass Wahoo or Blackjack. So that's why I said, Dad, you know, I'm going to learn the best I can so these guys will, you know, I could just honor those guys. And what tickles me to death, Mike, is all these independent wrestlers do is sit around and watch DVDs and wrestling tapes. You would think they would get something right every now and then. But how can you mess up when all you do is watch wrestling all the time? I don't have a problem. I saw a guy slam a guy the other night from, like, it was just like opposite. I mean, it was like he went in from, like, the wrong side and trying to pick this guy up. And I don't even know who told him that, but somebody should have stopped him a long time ago. And, I, you know, but now it's just a thing where, okay, you pay me so much, you pay me a couple $100, you know. I told Les one time about a guy walking in my training center, Mike. He had a Ric Flair, not a DVD now, he had a Ric Flair VHS tape. Said he wanted to be a wrestler. I said, well, buddy, you know, there's a proper way to do it now. And I said, it ain't for free. And he said, oh, no. Yeah, he said, I don't want to train. He said, I've been watching this Ric Flair VHS tape for the last 6 months. So I guess he was trained.
Yeah.
He had his Ric Flair VHS tape. And he really
well,
believed
you know,
it.
I, George, when a few years ago down at the Fan Fest, I had some of the manuals that Steamboat and Harley and I did, and I saw this kid. You know, a kid was looking at him. I said, I said, how you doing? He said, you're one of the guys that wrote this book. I said, yeah. I said, we're running a special for the Fan Fest. I said, are you interested? He said, no. He said, my buddy and I are going to teach ourselves. And I said, how are you going to do that? He said, well, we watch a lot of tapes. I said, really? He said, yeah. I said, let me ask you a question. I said, I started watching doctor shows when Ben Casey was on back in the 1950s and television was just black and white. And I said, I've watched doctor shows ever since. I said, would you let me operate on you?
Oh,
and he looked
that.
At me like I was nuts. And I said,
oh, I love
well,
that, Les.
I said, you'll learn to wrestle by watching tapes as much as I'll learn to be a doctor by watching them.
That's right, buddy. Oh, don't worry. That'll be in my next book, Les. I'll steal that, buddy. I love that. Well, you know, Mike, any other sport, I don't care if it's bowling, they won't let you just walk on to a bowling league unless you've bowled a little bit. Try walking on. You know, there was a comedian on Letterman the other night, and he said his he was always small in school. His dream was to run a punt back. That's all he ever wanted to do. So this college in Ohio, not big state, but this Ohio college did it. He had it on tape. So after their practice one day, he's back in the back, you know, way down on the other end of the field by himself. So So this guy, they punted him the ball. Now, they had 12 men on that other field, 11 men, whatever. He grabbed the ball, and I want you to know, it's the funniest thing I've ever seen. They killed him. I mean, they killed him. And he said, maybe that was not the smartest thing that I ever done. And I use that little stupid illustration to my wrestlers. You can't, you know, that's so Saturday. A couple of policemen wanted to get in the ring with some of the wrestlers. And I said, guys, listen to me. I said, I'll let you. I said, but then I'm going to take one of y'all's guns, and I'm just going to go out here on the street and start shooting. And they said, well, you ain't going to do that. And I said, well, that's what you're asking me to do. And they said, oh, now we get it. I said, listen, just anybody can't do, Les, what you've done and what I've done. Just anybody can't do it. They may think
they
can, but you know, Les Thatcher, listen, and my last sentence about you in my book is, when there's not a full-time job for Les Thatcher in pro wrestling, after everything you used to do, then there's a problem. Now, Les, and then I end it with that.
Thank you,
and,
sir.
Yeah,
I
you know, you're like
that.
Me. We still keep digging and we're still involved, but, you know, there is a problem when that ain't happening. And I list you and about three other guys. Terry Taylor, I think he's getting back in it a little bit. But, you know, I just, guys like that, Steamboat, I mean, you know, we all, everybody says, yeah, well, you get older. That don't mean nothing to me. I swear, it doesn't mean nothing to me. And that's what's in that book right there. And I just tell people, see, I want people to feel what we felt. You know, when it's your baby's birthday and you got to be on the road for 2 weeks paying for his gifts, but you can't be there when he opens them. See, that's what I don't want it to be a sad time. I want people to feel, you know, they think we all just flew to the towns.
Right.
They, you know, they don't understand that you drove hundreds and hundreds of miles to wrestle that match and then get in the car and drive hundreds and hundreds of more miles. You know, I got a little story in there that Bullet Bob told me. Armstrong said he went to get his taxes done, and the lady looked down and she says, Mr. Armstrong, I think you made a mistake. Said, I used to live in this little town, and it's not that many miles. And Bullet said he told her, ma'am, I drove back the same night. So, you know, so nobody realizes,
yeah.
You know, before we ever got to the show, what went into it. And that's one thing in this book, I promise you, that, you know, many high school football games, weddings, you know, when your kids, very important times that you couldn't go back, but it wasn't like you were fooling around. You were doing your job so your family could eat.
That's
all it was. You just made your towns. And that's why I keep about on every page in here, it's just you made your towns no matter what. And because if you didn't, we didn't eat. You know that, Les, Mike, buddy. If you didn't make your town, you didn't eat.
That's right.
Buddy. And I miss it. Oh, my gosh. Man, I look at these old Crockett check stubs where I made, you know, $40, you know, driving to Columbia, driving back. Oh, my gosh. I wish it was so simple and so, well, anyway. Dad Vernon, I'm sitting here at a campfire, and y'all the only two listening to me. I done run everybody else off.
You know what? I think more than a few are. And George, again, growing up, having a chance to watch you, I can't thank you enough for this, and I cannot wait to read the book, too. You know, I saw a picture of Mike Mooneyham reading it. You know, he probably didn't buy one. He just stole it off your coffee table and he went and
looked. Oh, yeah.
But I can't
wait
to read
it. This review he does better be good, or I'm going to get my book back. Let me tell you.
George, I'm gonna be at in Charlotte in August for Fan Fest, and when I get that book, now you're gonna have to autograph it for me,
buddy. I will personally give you one, and when I see you, and I know you're gonna say it, George. You're saying it because you're on the phone. I've got a list on my table of Christmas cards that I send out. That's my list, and I keep it with me all the time. Of course, you. And your lovely wife's name's on that thing. But Dick Bourne told me yesterday, said, you know, you're going to see Les at FanFest. And I knew that, but I kind of forgot. And so you won't be getting it in the mail. But, buddy, when I see you in a few months, I'm going to hand it right to you, buddy.
All right. Be sure to autograph it for me.
I sure will, guys. Listen, Mike, thank you so much, Les. I love you to death. And I maybe next time I'll let y'all get a word in, okay?
George, I love you too, my friend. God bless you, and I look forward to seeing you in August. I really do.
Me too, Mike. And thank you, buddy. Thank you for everything, Les. I love you. I'll see you in a few months, okay?
All right, brother.
Thank you.
George,
bye-bye.
Thank you so much. The book, Dad, You Don't Work, You Wrestle, available not only through RSI Ringside Wrap, but definitely go over and check out georgesouth.com. I get to see a lot of great pictures, a little bit about Exodus Championship or Exodus Wrestling Alliance, and a little bit of everything, and definitely got to order the book and cannot wait to have George back on here. But I know the producer is probably pulling his hair out right now.
I was just thinking
left,
the
so.
Same thing. I thought Tate's having cardiac arrest about this time. They're not following my script there.
Ladies and gentlemen, Bill Paying Time here on Ringside Wrap.
Hi, I'm Susanna.
And this is Debbie from the Bengals.
For Rad. Recording artists, actors, and athletes against drunk driving.
What does it mean to be a designated driver?
It actually takes guts and shows you care about your friends. After all, their lives are in your hands.
So why don't you and your friends take it in turns to be the designated driver when you go out? You'll make the road safer for all of us.
A public service message brought to you by RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
Ranger Station.
Yeah, hi. I'd like to report a bear sighting in the forest.
Uh-huh.
1 second I'm having a smoke. Next thing I know, I'm face-to-face with Smokey Bear.
Wow.
And he told me it only takes one spark to start a wildfire.
Did you know 9 out of 10 wildfires are caused by humans?
I had no idea.
That's why Smokey's famous and you're not. Get your Smokey on. If you see someone in danger of starting a wildfire, step in and make a difference. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council. Learn more at SmokeyBear.com.
Only you can prevent wildfires.
Do you remember Tommy Rich? What about Red Gunkel or Gordon Solie? Can't get those nasty Anderson brothers out of your head? Well, you can catch them again at GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Who was on the first card you attended? Who was it under that mask? Remember the first Omni Spectacular or the big main events at the Bell Auditorium? That happened in Columbus on my birthday. Find out at GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Whether you want to get back some of your past, or maybe you just want to find pro wrestling in your area, check out GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com.
Lots of experts talk about the ways that schools should inspire students to be creative. How you doing? I'm John Prime. They say that helping young minds tap their creativity is just as important as mastering math or their English skills. And of course, all parents love to experience the joy of seeing and hearing something their child has created. Well, one of the best places creativity is actively encouraged is in music class. There you'll find kids working out a phrase in a choir part, learning technical stuff such as fingerings on an instrument, or even composing and arranging music on computers. Music classrooms are bursting with creative energy just waiting to be explored by young minds. So don't let it go to waste. Support your school music program. Thank you.
A PSA brought to you by MENC, the National Association for Music Education, and the National Anthem Project, the campaign to restore America's voice through music education. Music, part of a sound education.
If you're hurt, get the money you deserve. If you're in pain, get the money you deserve. At Terry and Peterman, we're personal injury attorneys who take a professional, thorough approach to your accident and injury claims. Don't call some long-distance law firm or satellite office. Don't trust your claim to just anyone. For a free consultation, call the law office of Terry and Peterman today, 229-247-0386, or go online at www.terryandpeterman.com. The law offices of Terry and Peterman, making things right.
Hey, parents, it's hard to pick up your kids nowadays without embarrassing them.
Hi, honey.
Mom, not in front of my friends.
Well, kiss the embarrassment goodbye with OMGPS. OMGPS is a state-of-the-art navigation system that tells you exactly how far away you need to park when you pick up your kids.
Keisha at mall. Proceed to outer food court.
But she's not at the food court. She's at the movie theater.
Exactly. OMGPS comes with patented preteen reasoning technology to pinpoint precise pickup locations and minimize embarrassment.
In 100 yards, turn off the oldies music.
Thanks, OMGPS.
OMGPS is not available in stores because it doesn't exist. But that's okay. You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. Because kids in foster care don't need perfection. They need you. For more information on how you can adopt, go to AdoptUsKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt Us Kids, and the Ad Council.
No sleep till
All right, we're back here on Ringside Rap, the legendary Les Thatcher, along with me, Mike Sempervivi, and man, I wish George South would just come out of his shell. I cannot believe it was a 700-page manuscript that got sent originally.
I'm surprised it wasn't more. I mean, really.
Angry now. I'm angry after years of watching him, you know, look up at the lights and being, you know, all that time, and I never had a chance to hear him on the mic. Now I'm upset.
I think that George exemplifies the passion for the business that most of the guys from our generation had. And, he's right. That can't be duplicated, has never been duplicated. You might find the odd young man that understands that and tries to do that same, you know, feel that same way or does feel that same way, I should say. But for the most part, they don't. And that's what, you know, that lacks in their work, Mike. It really does. I mean, you know, you find a great musician or a great actor that, part of them being great at what they do is their passion for what they do. And so many of these guys don't understand that passion. They honestly do not. And George was a good worker and a good at what he did because he loved what he did. You know, and that's part of the key to success in our business.
Well, I always wanted to, if I ever got enough hours in the day to write the book, how, you know, professional wrestling taught me everything. Because almost everything in my youth, I started watching wrestling at such a young age and just was just so enthralled with it from such a young age. It's like theme music, you know. I hear Footloose, I think Avalanche, Buzz, Tyler. It just, things just, like, I wanted to be Ric Flair. And, you know, George talked about, you know, because Paul Jones turned, you know, he turned. It's kind of the same way when it came to Ric Flair and me. And it just, you know, I don't have to write that book because I think George already wrote that book as far as that type of passion. And I just, you know, he talked about his link being Ric Flair. Once he's gone, it's going to be kind of like his link gone. You know, he's still doing, you know, as he talked about last Saturday, he's still doing his thing now. And, man, for everything that he goes through and the love that he has, I mean, that hopefully he continues on doing this because, you know, it's when you guys stop talking about it and stop talking about what it meant, that's when it is going to go away. At least we have those strands with this, and I cannot wait to read this book. I really cannot.
Yeah. Well, you know, I can go back to my childhood, and Buddy Rogers was my childhood idol. I wanted my mother to let me bleach my hair. I mean, if you can imagine, this would have been back around 1950. I mean, a kid with bleached blonde hair at that time would have been, I mean, you know, God knows what would have happened. Probably been in a fight in the schoolyard every day of my life. But that was, to me, you know, I wanted to be Buddy Rogers. I mean, that consumed my life at that point in time. So I totally understand. And, you know, that's, well, you know, and it's basically, you know, we believed who we were when we came through the curtain. And that's what we tried to sell to the crowd. And so many of these kids today, it's superficial because they're entertaining themselves. They're not even concerned. I had a young man who I don't know, Mike. I mean, never met. He hooked up with me on my Facebook page, but he sent me a link to a match, a tag match, and it was just, I mean, I almost felt bad about critiquing it to him because it was just a mishmash of moves that made no sense. There was no story. I had no idea who was supposed to be the heels or the baby faces. It was just four guys doing a bunch of things that made no sense. And at one point, all four of them were laying around in different degrees of trying to sell or thought they were, and then one of them would get up and do something and lay back down. I mean, when I say lay back down, you know, fall back down, collapse back. And I thought, my God. And I did tell him an email. I said, please don't be offended by this, but I said, if I were scouting for a major company and this tape had been sent to me 3 minutes in, I would have stopped watching it. I mean, I would have found no reason to continue to look at it. First of all, none of these guys were physically in any type of great shape, you know, and it was just, there was no continuity, no rhyme or reason for what they for them even being out there. And I said, you know, listen, I said, there was audio on this thing, and it was on YouTube, and I said, listen to this. I said, when you guys, even the big fancy bumps, you get a little dribble of sound from a few people, but for the most part, it's like, who cares? You know, they don't pay attention to that. They're entertaining themselves, and that's the sad thing.
Coming up this weekend, do want to mention that we're in, a lot of stuff that we're going to end up talking about next week, because a little bit of a packed weekend this weekend. If you include TNA Sacrifice on Sunday, I believe the Evolve show is on Saturday, as well as ROH's Border Wars, which I'm looking forward to seeing Lance Storm and Mike Bennett again after the match they had in Florida. So going to be interesting, ROH with doing the iPay-per-view production themselves. It's got to be a step up at this point from what they've been having so far. So hopefully for them, I'm not saying it's a make or break show, but it is a big deal as far as, you know, seeing the visibility they have and how much impact that Sinclair TV show has had. So going to be talking about all that stuff, and I'm sure some more WWE stuff too, because, well, it'll be interesting to say the least, I guess. So, Les, I know you got a bunch of stuff coming up, so what you got?
Well, actually, you know, some ifs, ands, and I mean, some things that don't have dates tied down. Obviously, we just did a Wrestler's Eye Radio on Insider today, which is up, and then Vic Socia and I will be doing Wrestling Weekly. We're actually going to record Friday this week for the Observer Figure Four site, and then back here next Wednesday. As I mentioned earlier to George, I am in Charlotte for Fan Fest. I'm doing one of the announcers on the two shows. There's going to be a training. I guess I'm going to be part of the training camp too. I know Greg hasn't announced it yet. Tentatively, I don't have any dates. I will be in Southern California at some point over the next few months. I'm talking to Roland Alexander with APW in San Francisco about doing 4 days with those guys up there. And Vance Nevada and I have touched, well, we met in Vegas for the first time. But tentatively, I will be in Western Canada for a week, probably in September, but I don't have the dates locked in as of yet. So, and I am negotiating with a new promotion, which will be a little different than just an independent promotion, which is being formed in Southern California. And all the loose ends aren't tied up as yet, but you and I can talk a little more about that probably in a couple weeks.
Awesome. And do also want to mention, too, Peach Day Pandemonium tomorrow night. We have a freeform show, no guests tomorrow, but no planned topics either. So just everybody listen in, see what happens. Give them a call as well. Obviously, ringsiderap.com. Go for all the news every day at ringsiderap. If you're a Twitter, got your Twitter account. And don't forget about GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com as well. As far as me, well, you know, Brian Alvarez and I, Wrestling Observer Live this coming Sunday, Mother's Day Sunday. So unlike Brodus Clay, who will do an inset interview and scare you and your mother because he's not doing a very good job of it, I'm going to say very nicely, Happy Mother's Day to all the mothers out there, including mothers like Rich Tate, who
who is a mother.
So, again, really thank George South again for having him on. And Les, I look forward to talking to you next week, sir.
All right. Have a good one, Mike.
You too, and good night, everybody.
We thank you for listening to this broadcast, a production brought to you by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com and the GWH Radio Network. Stay tuned to GWH for nostalgia, upcoming events, and more. As always, GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com thanks you for your continued support.